All right, everybody, we're going to get it started in just a bit. We want to thank you all for coming to Picasso's on this stormy night. Thank you for braving the weather and coming out to hear this discussion on school choice. We've got a lot of things going on at the state capitol. Some things have already been killed, but of course, they could always come back up again. And so that's what we're going to be discussing tonight. Do also want to thank Picasso's for allowing us to come in tonight. And mentioned that the Anthem Brewing Company, the special is the Anthem Brewing Company Arjuna. It's a Belgian-style wit beer. It tastes orange peel, flavors of orange peel, coriander, and chamomile. It's a very spring-like beer. It's very good. And that comes with the appetizer, which is artichoke and pine nut. See, can't even read my own writing. And pine nut and artichoke and pine nut bruschetta. So again, we're going to be talking about school choice. A lot of things going on at the Capitol right now. A lot of discussions about what to do with private school, with public school. And we got two guys who are going to talk about that. And I did actually write down who all is speaking. We've got the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs Senior Vice President, Brandon Dutcher. Please give him a hand. Thank you. And Cooperative Council of Oklahoma School Administration. Now, I wrote this down this morning. It was General Counsel and Director of Legislative Services, but that's not your correct title anymore, is that right?
Just been named as the incoming Executive Director.
The Executive Director, Ryan Owens. So again, a lot of things going on in the realm of school choice, a lot of decisions going on at the state capitol. And Ryan, why don't we go and start with you, just a couple of minutes as an opening statement. Your thoughts about the things that are going on and your thoughts on some of those bills and what's going on.
Sure. Well, in terms of school choice, it's always a topic at the state capitol. Folks wanting to look at the effectiveness of public schools and measure that against other options that parents may want to exercise in the education of their children. And of course, in Oklahoma, our Supreme Court, legislators and educators support a parent's right to choose the best education delivery system for their child. And we've worked with that for as long as we've been a state. So our work at COSA is to support our members who are school administrators from K-12 districts, with which most of us are familiar. We also have members from charter schools and from private schools. So we represent folks from the entire spectrum. And in terms of legislation this year, a unique place for COSA, in partnership with the State School Boards Association and the associations that represent charter schools, we have worked to support legislation, Senate Bill 782 and House Bill 1696, to expand charter schools statewide through the option of the locally elected school board. And we're excited to bring more options to children. There was another bill this year that dealt with vouchers for private schools, and we can talk about vouchers at a later time. We opposed that bill, but always it's a topic. It's on the minds of voters, it's on the minds of legislators, and clearly it's on your mind tonight, or maybe you're just here for the beer. I don't know, but happy to talk through school choice.
Brandon, your thoughts on school choice, especially Ryan had mentioned about vouchers.
Yeah, I think, and I'm glad you mentioned a specific, I think it might be helpful to define our terms at the outset. I think of school choice as any policy which allows parents to choose the school they want. So it could be public school choice, like magnet schools or transfer between districts or within a district, charter schools. And then the sort of the more controversial, I think, is private school choice, vouchers, tax credits, education savings accounts, that sort of thing. Of course, Oklahoma has a thriving homeschool sector as well. There's virtual schools now. So there are a lot of school choices out there and a lot of school choice policies. So I'm happy to talk about any of them. I think I was telling Joe a minute ago, this isn't kind of my crowd, as you might not be shocked to learn. But I urge you to remember the maxim that even a broken clock is right twice a day. So even though I'm wrong on tax cuts and Obamacare and so forth, I could possibly be right on school choice. So I urge you to keep that open. But I think this may seem like an alien from another planet, but I think I have a different worldview about education as opposed to, I mean, we all know the traditional view of, you know, the government runs the schools and kids go, for the most part, to the school they're assigned to, closest to their house. I have a totally different view that parents and not government officials should be in charge, and that the goal of public education is just we want an educated public, and it doesn't matter where that takes place, public, private, charter. So I think that's the sort of an initial statement to kind of lay out where I'm coming from.
Well, let's start there with parents, because one of the things I always hear a lot is that we want to give parents the ability to decide. Well, in Oklahoma, we do know that less than 20% of our adult population has a college degree. We know that only about 70 to 80% even has a high school diploma. I know we want parents to make decisions, but aren't there decisions that also need to be made by people who have been educated and have graduated not only high school and college, but actually gone on to learn about education rather than the parents who maybe might not know what's best for their children?
You want me to take that first?
Sure.
That's actually an argument we hear a lot. A former state rep made that argument on the House floor in 2010 when the Lindsay Nicole Henry Scholarship Bill was being debated. He said, you know, parents may think they know best, but do they? Now, I was sort of surprised he would say that on the House floor, and I wrote in a subsequent column, if Oklahoma parents are not smart enough to decide where their kids can go to school, how can they be trusted to elect a competent official to represent them in the Oklahoma House of Representatives? So I just think it's sort of condescending to parents. I mean, Jason Nelson had a good point when his daughter got sick. He said, look, I'm not a doctor, but as a parent, I quickly found out what to do. And I don't think it's difficult for parents to find out what the best decision to make is.
And yeah, if I can respond to that, certainly it's never been the position of our association that educators know best. We think educators work best in partnership with parents, guardians of students, those who know that child and know how they learn and how we can meet their unique needs. I think the real issue, probably the distinction between the two organizations and our points of advocacy, is that we have advanced policies that say parents of public school students aren't smart enough to know what's best for their children. That's why we need an A through F system. It's why we need a teacher evaluation system. It's why we have to have state standards and state assessments. But if the parent is smart enough to put their child in a private school that has no regulation or accountability to taxpayers, then that parent's made a better choice. And I just fundamentally disagree with that. I think parents need to have access to good information about all schools so they can make an informed decision. But to have good information, you have to have an evenly applied metric of measurement. And we're not there yet in terms of public policy. We can get there, but we can't assume that parents of public school students are less enlightened than their private school counterparts. And we just have to make sure our public policies respect the voice of parents in all education settings.
Okay, questions? Yeah, right here.
Knowing the diversity of all of the state of Oklahoma, from our population centers, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Lawton, to our less populated areas and our far-flung areas. How do we ensure that the children across the state get the same opportunities, given that the children in Oklahoma City, were they to be given a private education, might benefit more from being in a population center versus those people in less densely populated areas who might have to bus hours to obtain the same benefits?
You want me to? That's an excellent point. And obviously school choices are more available in large population areas. Although you'd be surprised, charter schools are popping up in rural areas, in Walton, Kansas, for example, and that are sort of dedicated to agricultural issues. Heck, in Corn, Oklahoma, population 500 or something, you know, Corn Bible Academy has been there for 100 years. They would gladly take more students. So in addition, in existing traditional public schools can, you know, would maybe want to become charters in rural areas. Or maybe the traditional public school is the choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, school choice doesn't mean everyone has to choose something else. We could enact universal school choice tomorrow, and still, most people would go to a traditional public school, I think. I mean, there is a heavy demand. Polling data show there's a heavy demand. People want, you know, they might choose something else, but there aren't enough seats, certainly not overnight. And enough people already practice real estate-based school choice. You know, people in Edmond, up in my neighborhood, they're perfectly thrilled with where they're going. So I don't think school choice means we have to choose something other than public.
And you know, the only thing I would add to that is I'm from rural Oklahoma. Probably couldn't tell that by my accent. But I'm from Marietta. So when I graduated high school, there were 49 kids in my class, and the public school was the school. But we've come a long way just in terms of the Open Transfer Act, where students can move from one school to another. And that kind of speaks to the busing issue. But if you think about the choices available within the public school system, so we have a statewide virtual charter school, a network of schools and providers that the student can access that information from home, or they can have blended learning in the traditional K-12 school. We have concurrent enrollment, so we have a lot of our students in high school who are receiving college credit for the work that they're doing inside their high school, or advanced placement where they're taking those tests and earning college credit that way as well. And so we have a multiple offering of options within the public setting in addition to charter schools, which are public schools, and then the private school opportunity that, as you point out correctly, really does exist primarily in the urban and suburban areas. But to Mr. Dutcher's point, you can find those in a lot of religious connected schools in the rural areas. But there is choice available no matter where you look, no matter where you are. It's just being creative in how you access those opportunities. And I think in terms of choice and where we are in Oklahoma with the Open Transfer Act, the statewide virtual charter school, the different opportunities we make available, we're way ahead a lot of other states who really do restrict children to that neighborhood school and no place else.
Other questions? Yes.
You mentioned vouchers, and one of the issues that you had was with transparency as far as private schools. Could it not simply require private schools to be transparent or to go through a grading system as a condition of accepting money from vouchers, or is that not the real issue?
So we have run legislation the last couple of years that would say to any private school that takes taxpayer money that the same accountability system imposed on public schools would be placed on the private school. And we do that not to be punitive. We do that to inform taxpayers. At the end of the day, taxpayer dollars would be supporting the education of a child in a private school. It's not that the individual parent is getting a refund of their taxpayer dollars through a voucher. That's not what that is. It is my money and your money as property tax, as property owners, as people who pay income tax, going into the state's general revenue, and those dollars being appropriated for the education of a child in private school. So, if the legislature wants to appropriate my taxpayer money to a private citizen to educate their child outside of the public education system, then as a taxpayer, I have a right to know whether or not that private school is teaching the student state standards and they're meeting the expectations that my dollars are funding.
Brandon,
and that's where we are.
I don't want to go a little bit further because she has a good point about taxpayer dollars. But taxpayer dollars are important, but these are our children. Isn't it important that these private schools be just as accountable as our public schools, just because they're taking care of our children?
I don't, as you might guess, as a conservative, I'm not as big on accountability as Ryan is, although I do agree level the playing field. I would do it by putting less strings on him rather than more strings on private schools. I mean, you think of, you say that, I mean, it's often said that you have to be accountable, but that's not true of all government programs. I mean,
right.
Social Security checks, I mean, it's supposed to be so grandpa doesn't starve, but he could just go blow it at the casino. And we don't check, we don't know, we just assume in a free society people will make wise decisions. Even, you know, Pell Grants, Stafford Loans, we don't, I mean, we just give people money. So, I'm not sure, accountability, you know, I think people, it's sort of a magic word. Oh, well, public schools are accountable. I think that just means they have rules and regulations, but are they really accountable? I mean, if we have, as Senator Earl Garrison says, we have 400,000 adult illiterates in this state, I'm wondering, how did we get that? And who's, I mean, they grew up, and who was accountable? I mean, did someone get fired? Did teachers get a pay cut? Did parents get their money back? I mean, I think of accountability as if someone brings me a Mexican meal and it's bad, I'm going to get make it right or give me my money back. I mean, so I don't think of accountability as just rules and regulations. And I think private schools are accountable and charter schools are accountable to parents because if it's not working, they just leave.
Okay. One second.
Thank you. I wasn't even scheduled to attend this. I actually just came for dinner, but since we're here, I thought I'd chime in.
Well, we're glad you're here.
Here we go.
Thank you. I guess my question in regards to accountability, I haven't really personally made a personal decision whether I'm in favor of charter schools or private schools in that aspect of supporting them to this extent, so it's even better that I'm here right now. So I guess what I want to know is that if we have an issue with the accountability for public schools, then why haven't we really addressed the concepts of, like, why don't we pay our teachers enough so they could want to perform better and do better within our classrooms? In the state of Oklahoma, I think you guys were saying that Oklahoma's made a lot of progress, or we are ahead of a lot of other states in regards to this area, but we're really behind a lot of other states in regards to paying our teachers a livable wage. And then there's other things. I mean, that literacy number, you're right, it is ridiculous. But I think that, have you guys, I mean, and this is just me kind of throwing a curveball, I guess. Hope I don't take you off topic too much. But have we looked at other avenues of maybe helping those people that are illiterate or catching them early on in our educational system to, you know, maybe push promotion of continuing your education? What efforts have we done as a state to actually make a difference before we just start funding money through charter schools when we actually have a public school system where teachers do want to teach and teachers do care, but are we supporting them enough to make them successful so they can help our students grow?
Generally. That's more in your wheelhouse there.
Okay. Yeah. So with respect to teacher pay, I couldn't agree more. We are, you know, near the bottom in teacher pay, and we've been there for quite some time. And, you know, for me, I don't understand how we could ever expect the best, most highly qualified teacher in the classroom when we don't want to financially seek out the best and most talented individuals to come into the classrooms. I mean, you get what you pay for. And in no matter what business industry you're in, you reap what you invest. And so I totally agree with you. It is why we support State Superintendent Joy Hoffmeister's hashtag OK High Five plan. Let's raise our teacher pay over 5 years to at least meet the regional average so we don't lose teachers to surrounding states. So I totally agree with you in terms of the teacher pay and the need to fix it. With respect to the literacy problem, it is a terrible statistic, and it is sad that we have people who go through education system and can't read at the end of that time. But I would say that, again, educators work best in partnership with parents and guardians and families. And so the ownership of that outcome belongs to a multitude of people. It is not just one individual teacher who failed a student. And it means we need to improve. And so how do we do that? We have the Reading Sufficiency Act that was passed a few years ago that requires us to have third graders reading at grade level. But it has an arbitrary line in the sand and punitive retention if the child can't read. So we were able to change that law to say that parents would be required to work with educators to remediate that problem. We're trying to keep that concept alive, that team of parents and educators working together to address the illiteracy issue. And so, great question, and we really are trying to work on those issues, both pay and literacy.
Brandon?
I would just add that it doesn't make sense for me to say we should give teachers raises any more than we should give accountants raises, we should give doctors raises. For professionals, you can't speak of a class monolithically like that. I mean, OCPA is on record as saying Oklahoma's best teachers, we want to be millionaires, like some of South Korea's rock star teachers are. Good teachers deserve a raise. Mediocre teachers, not sure. Poor teachers, well, they don't deserve a raise. They don't even deserve to be employed. So I don't understand this whole business of across the board. And I know it's tough, and I talked to Superintendent Hoffmeister of the Chamber deal, and I think she's sympathetic to merit pay. It's just a heavier lift and a long-term lift. She's just trying to do triage now and get, you know, across the board pay raises. It just doesn't seem right to me. Two quick things I'll mention to give pay raises maybe on a quicker basis. One of them we talked about just in the hall before. There's a bill from Glenn Mulready and Greg Treat that would enable teachers to save a lot of money in out-of-pocket health care expenses, like Oklahoma County is doing, City of Yukon, City of Ardmore, and others. So teachers can, if they use a different medical provider that's like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, for example, they can save a couple thousand on average. So that's, you know, that's not every teacher, but it's something. Mm-hmm. And then another proposal that's out there is to eliminate the income tax for teachers. So those are two that are out there, as well as the across-the-board pay raises that's out there.
Right here.
If I can just add one little piece to that, and I know this is not really a debate. The only issue that I see with the teacher pay and not wanting to do an across-the-board raise but focusing more on merit pay is that idea works if we have a surplus of highly qualified teachers. But right now we have a teacher shortage. We have over 1,000 vacancies statewide and a lot being staffed with long-term substitutes who are not certified to teach the subject in the classroom in which they're working. And so there are root cause issues, and as I agree, there is a need for merit pay and for your best teachers to be rewarded for that work. But before you can achieve that aspirational goal, you really do have to address, as Mr. Dutcher talked about, the triage of, okay, we really have to address the immediate need before we get to the lingering challenge.
Yes.
Hi. With regards to RSA, I mean, we
that's the Reading Sufficiency Act.
We hold these kids accountable. There is a punitive consequence if they do not read above a first grade level when they take the third grade test, and possibly above the second grade level, because there's a bill going through to raise that, I believe. But what are we doing to hold the schools accountable for using reading has been researched to death. We know Orton-Gillingham works. Why aren't the schools using it? Why aren't they forced to use it? I have two dyslexic children. We're on LNH scholarship. My son, I'll give you an example right now, he started first grade reading at a first grade level. He ended first grade reading at a first grade level. He went all the way through second grade reading at a first grade level. He started third grade reading at a first grade level. Had I not taken that scholarship, there's no reason to believe in public school they would have gotten their act together and let that child pass. He did at Trinity with 5 days a week with a reading therapist. He's now in fourth grade, three-fourths of the way through, reading at a beginning fourth grade level. But what is being done to force the schools to use something with fidelity that has been proven to work and not whatever they decide to pull out of their hat?
So in terms of the Reading Sufficiency Act, I would say the original Reading Sufficiency Act, or RSA, it provided a list of reading screening assessments that were approved by the State Board of Education, but then left at the option of the local school what assessment you were going to use, and then really left at the discretion of the district what were the remediation tools you were going, how were you going to actually drill down and help each individual child? And so when the Reading Sufficiency Act was amended in 2011, I think is when the first major amendment to RSA took place, still the conversation was about assessment, diagnosis, but then as you just pointed out, the punishment was still placed on the student, not on the adults. And that's been our concern with reading sufficiency, as well as the Achieving Classroom Excellence Act, which says you have to pass a certain number of tests in order to graduate. The penalties are on the wrong person. They're on the student who really can't control the education delivery. Parents don't get to pick their, or children do not get to pick their parents, and typically they don't get to pick their teacher, even in a private school. And so we have to think differently, and we have to think smarter about how we address those problems. But unfortunately, right now, the public policy of this state has been focused on punishing students. And so the only way to fix that is to incentivize better practices, to work through, work with folks who have, as you said, evidence of success. And we're doing that with this new state superintendent, with new leadership at the state capitol, new folks who've come in since the last elections. And, you know, interestingly enough, I will say about Superintendent Hoffmeister, she has brought together very diverse groups to sit around the table and try to talk about these issues. So it's not an overnight fix, and I'm glad that the Lindsay Nicole Henry Scholarship is working for you and your family. I can't say anything about what happened in your situation. It's unacceptable. I represent all school administrators in Oklahoma. It is absolutely unacceptable that a child can't read unless there is a severe cognitive issue that truly prohibits that.
Disability, and we're going to retain the child because they can't get their act together, look at research, and pick a program that's been proven to work, and get the teacher trained.
I want to give Brandon a chance to talk, to answer that question.
Yeah, no,
well.
And I don't know as much about reading sufficiency as Ryan, Mr. Owens does, but I'm glad you mentioned Lindsay Nicole Henry, because that's my jumping off point to praise that program. And I'm looking around here, I'm realizing my only way to make headway with this crowd is to start quoting some Obama delegates. So I'm going to just do that right now. No, I'm kidding. But my point is about Lindsay Nicole Henry and special needs vouchers, and vouchers generally, is there, it's not just a crazy Milton Friedman libertarian Republican thing, although it's largely that, but it's also a very diverse coalition of folks that support it. Anastasia Pittman, of all people, voted for the Lindsay Nicole Henry Scholarship. Jamar Shumate, another Obama delegate for the Henry Scholarship. So there are reasons that sort of trend party lines that people have, and really it only makes sense, because we've had for years, we are already voucherized kids, some special, like if a profoundly disabled child walks into the Marietta school district and says, I'm here for my free education, but this is going to cost you $250,000. I mean, the superintendent is going to voucherize that child to Wichita or to some, like, possibly, to some private out-of-state facility. And everyone seems to be fine with it. It's been going on for years. Superintendents can make that decision. So why can parents not make the same decision if they feel that's best for their individual child? There are 400 Henry Scholarship kids now, doing great. I'm making movies about them as quick as I can. There's a great one about Trinity School. So it's just one example of school choice that I think is a real success story, and I hope the Oklahoma Supreme Court agrees with me, but we shall see.
All right, back here.
Ezekiel Manuel, the medical expert, says that 5% of the complicated cases generate almost 80% of the cost in medicine. In education, it's the same pattern. Mm-hmm. Kids who've been traumatized to the point that their cognitive processes have been altered. If every district had 5% or had a fair share, that would be one thing. But what we have in Oklahoma City is we have 23 different districts to choose from. We have magnet schools, we have choice schools, we have enterprise schools, and that's left such intense concentrations of poverty within our toughest schools that if we have more choice, some of these schools are going to collapse. When I taught at Centennial, every 2 hours I had more seriously emotionally disturbed students in class than every single charter in New Jersey put together. And guess what? Every afternoon I had more seriously disturbed students in my class than the entire charter school population of seriously emotionally disturbed students in New Jersey. Weak.
I believe
you get my point.
Well, and the other piece to that is so many of our education reforms that have been championed over the last 4 years have this whole 95-5 dilemma. We have painted 95% of Oklahoma's public schools with the brush of 5% of our lowest performers. And we have to, as I said, we have to be smarter about our reforms, have to make sure that they respect parent voices and parent input, so we don't have children who are just arbitrarily held back in third grade because they can't read at grade level if mom and dad think that's not the best option for that student. And I think we may lose power here in a minute, or maybe the good Lord's just agreeing with me. But the other piece to your point is about capacity. So we do have schools that face tremendous adversity, and we have to be able to give that school or those schools the resources necessary to succeed. And right now, with a teacher shortage, with minimal investment from the state, you just don't get there. So you get these other programs that allow a handful of kids to go away, and it works for those kids, but the remainder look around and say, even if I could go to a private school, would they have the capacity to serve me? Or over time, does the private school look like the public school with the same issues? So, you know, you just have to be smart about it and keep working through it. There is no easy answer. I guess if I could say anything tonight that you took away from me is there is no silver bullet. It is everybody working together in partnership trying to solve these problems for each child.
Brandon.
I agree with that. There is no panacea. School choice is not a panacea. I do think it's one of the best policy options out there, but it's certainly not a panacea. I mean, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't fix the brokenness of our world. I mean, and certainly not in one fell swoop, but we do the best we can at the margins. We help 400 Lindsay Nicole Henry kids right away. Perhaps we allow other kids to go to charters or, you know, although I'm sympathetic to a school closing, I mean, actually, if a school's terrible, don't we want it to close?
Hold on a second.
So there's the tornado siren.
Yeah, we've got tornado sirens going off. Is anyone watching the television back there telling us what's
You're
going on?
Let us know if we're going to get blown away, right?
Should we be seeking shelter? Okay.
Okay.
Famous last words.
They say we're fine.
Yeah.
Go for it, Brandon. I'm sorry. Go for it.
No, I was... you can't throw me off my game. I was saying, I think it's not necessarily a bad thing for schools to close. There was just...
...70-mile-an-hour winds at Overholser, so...
What's Picasso's plan? Do we get under the
I don't know. Where do we go if we go? We could probably go to the kitchen, something like that. I don't know if you want to drive right now. Okay. There we go. We got a basement across the street, so...
Okay. We don't need shelters.
We're Oklahomans. Oh.
That's
Thank
okay.
you, Joe. I'm sorry, Brandon. Go ahead.
That's it. Next question, I would say.
Okay, hold on a second. I did actually right over here.
Yes, hi. So I would just really like to hear both of your institutions, because I'm assuming you guys are both speaking on your respective entities, your perspectives on just the voucher, like vouchers as seen as a method of school choice, and Senator Jolly's retraction of SB 609. I just would like to hear your reactions to both of those things.
So Senator Jolly's bill of dealing with vouchers, and your thoughts, Brandon.
And I don't mind it being called vouchers because an ESA is kind of like a mini voucher, a customizable voucher, but technically it's not a voucher, and I don't think reporters are doing us a good, or doing readers and listeners a good service to call it that. It's an education savings account, so it would be a debit card that could be used like a voucher, but actually, I'm not getting on your case for saying it.
No. I just wanted to know more about that.
Right. So vouchers are like, we have vouchers in Oklahoma. The Henry Scholarship is one. You can take the money and go to a private school. ESAs are like that, but the money's on a debit card. Say it's, I don't know, Jolly's bill, but just say $5,000 or whatever. And you could spend some of it at a private school, or you could spend some of it at a Kumon tutoring center if you wanted, or get horseback therapy for your autistic child if you needed that, or just a mix of options. So we obviously think that's a really good idea. That's vouchers and tax credits are sort of the two biggies of private school choice, and ESAs are sort of the new next big thing. Only two states have them so far, but that sounds like hail, huh?
That's hail.
Yeah, we're getting hail.
So we're in favor of them. Sad that Jolly had to withdraw it, but it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Ryan, your thoughts on Senate Bill 609, wasn't it? The original was the voucher bill, Senate Bill 609?
I'm going to say...
Right, the education savings account.
You can say voucher. Sure. I'm just pointing out a little technicality.
If nothing else, Mr. Dutcher and I will have stellar interview skills after tonight. We've talked through tornadoes, hail, voucher, school choice. I mean, really, this has been a good bonding experience
yes,
for us.
Yes.
So, with respect to Senate Bill 609, and whatever, if you want to call it scholarship, a voucher, the delivery system is... taxpayer dollars going to a private citizen for educational options. And if the legislature wants to pursue that as public policy, we respectfully ask that any school that receives those state funds be subjected to the state accountability system imposed on our schools. Now, the policy behind taxpayers kind of wanting taxpayer money back that they're not using in a public system doesn't hold much water for me. And I'll give you an example. I've never been to a prison in Oklahoma. I don't intend to go to one. I think that's made out of wood. Just knocked on that for good luck. Yet, my taxpayer dollars support prisons every day. So, should I not just get those funds back because I don't use that government service? I mean, that's the logic behind a voucher or a return on taxpayer money for a service you don't use. So, just prior to Senator Jolly pulling the bill, we had a poll commission from Public Opinion Strategies, and Glenn Bolger, who's a well-known GOP pollster, his last big client was Mitt Romney, and he polled the issue of education choice in Oklahoma, and he found that over 75% of Oklahomans do not support taxpayer dollars being given to a private individual to subsidize private education, regardless of where it's obtained, in a church, in a private school, in a home school, wherever that may be. So we know that this is not an issue that the majority of Oklahoma voters support. What they really want in the same poll, at about the same margin, was investment in public education. They saw vouchers as not a way to fix struggling schools. And that's what we all want, is to fix the education system. You know, we don't look at a crumbling bridge in rural Oklahoma and say, well, the only way to fix it is to build is to have a private company build a bridge a mile away, and certain cars can go across that bridge and everyone else take the rickety bridge. We have to fix this system, and we have to make it a great system for parents and our consumers.
We're going to have to cut it short. We're being told that some serious situation is going on, so... I don't know where we're going to go right now. Well, let's go ahead and shut it down because we're getting into lots of sirens and we don't know what's going on. Just some final statements and then we'll go ahead and wrap it up.
Oh, just really enjoyed the opportunity. If you want to know more about COSA or our position statements, our website is ccosa.org, COSA.org.
We're OCPAthink.org, so thank you all. Be
thank
safe.
You.
Okay, we're getting word right now that there's a tornado on the ground at I-40 and I-44. I tell you the truth, though, I don't know if I would suggest that anybody leave because we are told, you know, you do not get in your cars, you do not go outside. Right now, this might be the safest place for everyone to be. So what we're going to do is we're going to monitor the weather people, the meteorologists, because I think they are going to tell us better about what's going on. I'd rather nobody leave. We've had that problem. We had that problem a couple of years ago when everyone left and got on the highway and a lot of people died. So if you could stay here, I would really recommend it. We love it here. And Picasso's, I promise, will take care of you. So thank you very much for coming, and have a great night.